didn't sound like he was positive he was Steve Bertrand.
I know.
But you are Steve. You're Steve Bertrand.
You know, I wasn't going to be, and then I decided that
someone has to be.
I will be.
Should be you.
And
you,
so I am.
You've been Steve Bertrand for a long time.
Almost all of my life.
Yep.
Not all of it.
Hey, Steve, guess... Oh, I should have asked if this is for air or not.
What?
Guess what? Somebody on the show is afraid of horses. Guess who it is.
Oh, God, stop.
Wendy?
Yes. How did you guess? I didn't know that.
Listen, I love animals. You know, I
am a huge
animal.
I just found out you're afraid of horses. I never would have guessed that.
My sister always wanted to take horseback riding lessons, and for some reason she didn't, and she was an adult, and she said, hey, take horseback riding lessons with me.
Yep.
And I said, all right, I guess.
Yeah. And you don't seem very enthusiastic about this.
Well, this was 20 years ago.
Oh.
And I said, okay, sure, I'll take them with you. And I was a little apprehensive, and I took a couple of lessons, and I started throwing up, and I went to the doctor, and it turns out I was pregnant, thank God.
Oh,
so
from
I
riding
said,
horses,
wow,
Wendy, are you sure?
That's quite a lesson.
That hardly ever happened.
I don't know if they did or did not get the message across.
We live in a world where anything's possible, but I'm almost sure that that doesn't cause you to be pregnant.
No, it doesn't, but it was timing is everything.
Yeah. 'Cause
I was a little afraid of the horses. You know, the first couple of lessons, it's a gallop, which you're bouncing all over the place,
right.
And you have to, like, kick your heels in and pull back on the reins at the same time to get them to canter.
Right.
And I was having a difficult time doing it, and I'm like, God, that's a long way down.
Yes.
These are really big. I felt like I was riding a giraffe.
It's like when you go on vacations and you're like, oh, we should do horseback riding.
Yeah.
Well, let's go. And I'm always like, why?
I know.
Why would you want to do that?
Well, it looks so fun on TV.
Really?
It does.
Yeah.
And so I think I had two or three lessons, and I called my sister and I said, big news. Guess what? I'm pregnant. And she's like, oh, that's great.
Yeah.
And I said, so that means I can't ride. And she said, who said that? I'm like, the doctor. Well, not till your later months. Yeah, but maybe I should just plan ahead. I was looking for an excuse to get out.
I was going to say, the doctor didn't tell you that, did he?
No. Because I was just like, you know, 8 weeks pregnant or something.
Right.
And so I said, Betsy,
you're out.
Now she's hearing it. I lied.
Oh,
I didn't want to do it. But she went on to own a couple of horses. And
you never rode those horses? Ever once? Never?
I pet them. Fed them sugar cubes, an apple. I mean, I love animals.
Right.
That's
why I'm so surprised by this.
You, on the other hand, have gone horseback riding.
I took lessons for 2 years horseback riding.
I
did.
That cannot be true.
At Tinley Park, I did. And you know why I did? For 2 years, I took horseback riding lessons.
Your mom did try everything, didn't she?
Everything. Do you know why I stopped taking lessons?
You got pregnant.
I got pregnant. The smell was too much for me. I could not deal with the smell.
Hey.
See,
and the hay got too much. It was also too much for me.
The smell of the manure?
Yes.
That's the only thing I think I would like about that.
Oh, no, Steve.
No. I almost said it, and I thought, wait for it?
No.
Bertrand will grab it.
It's so intense.
You get used to it.
It's very sweet smell. I do like it.
You don't.
Smell.
Not only did I not get used to it, I started to dread. We would go on Saturday mornings at 9 a.m., and I would dread. I'd go, I want so badly to ride the horses, but they've got to pick up after themselves, these horses, because that smell is just overpowering. I couldn't deal with it. Because we would do most of our class was inside where the smell was confined.
Yeah.
And then if it was really nice out the second half of the classes, we would ride around trails, which was fine because you were outside. But the inside part, couldn't do it. I would have made a horrible cowboy.
I'm so glad. Not just for that
reason. Well, there's other reasons. You know,
cowboys
don't wear
shorts.
Baseball caps and shorts ever. They're always wearing cowboy clothes. I don't have any cowboy clothes.
Although I'd like to see you in a cowboy hat. Maybe you should switch.
Well, maybe for your birthday. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. But I'm shocked that you have and you even used the word, you said, I'm afraid of horses.
I kind of am. They have big eyes.
Well,
those eyes are very...
But
looks like a Tyrannosaurus Rex eye.
I was horseback riding as a kid in the Garden of the Gods in Colorado. You know, the big rock formations?
Yes.
One of those trail rides. Where, like, why? And my horse walked out of the group right to the edge of the cliff.
And said, jump, Bertrand.
And she's looking down. And the guy
How
leading...
How panicked were you?
Well, I was probably 9 or 10. I was freaking out. The guide was saying, just kick her. I'm like, I'm not going to kick her.
I'll go forward.
I'm looking over a cliff. So finally, he got off his horse and came over and guided it away.
He got off his high horse.
His high horse.
What, Steve?
Could have been the end.
That could have been the end of you.
The Garden of the Gods and Steve.
Right. What a place to go, the Garden of the Gods.
Right. But to Steve's point, they do tack your name onto the title should something horrible happen. They're very kind about that.
Right.
Yep.
I guess I've done horseback riding on vacation and stuff.
Where on vacation did you go that you horseback rode?
Jamaica one time.
Yep. That would be lovely.
The horse was so high, I couldn't even deal with it. But that was just kind of like on the beach, and then they went in the water, which was pretty cool. And it's just the slow follow each other around on a trail.
Yeah.
But to actually take lessons and, you know, control that horse by yourself, it was too much for
me.
I don't know. I am afraid.
Shocked.
Somebody says, Wendy, I'm a Marine. About the only thing I'm afraid of is a horse. I got you.
That's so bizarre. I didn't know that. I guess you could be afraid of anything, but I'm shocked that you're afraid of horses. You're such an animal person. They didn't have horses at the when you were at the Brookfield. There were no horses there.
Yeah, they had the Clydesdales in the children's zoo.
And what was your reaction to them?
Did I didn't go anywhere
near
them.
Stayed away from them. How were you during the Budweiser commercials during the Super Bowl?
I love those. I like them. I now understand you don't dislike animals. You just don't want them around you, really.
Yes.
You don't
want
to own one.
Yeah.
That's how I am with horses. I see them ride and they're beautiful.
Right.
But I just...
It's not for you.
Not really.
That's so strange. Has it gotten better as time has gone down or worse?
No, but I might go visit my sister's horse, Tess, at the stable, and maybe I'll try if she leads Tess around for me.
And when you say try, you mean try to get along with it or try to ride
it? Get on it.
You won't. Oh, you will?
Yeah, maybe I'll try.
Oh, you're going to get pregnant.
Yeah, this is the sound.
Oh, God, forget
that's
it.
That's how it happens, Wendy.
I was going to say, this is the sound of us holding our breath.
You know the bad thing about that?
This is the summer of the Sound of Music.
Right.
If I did get pregnant, it wouldn't be worth it because I wouldn't even make the Guinness Book of World Records.
Right.
There are older women that have had babies, and Tony Randall.
He just had another child. Congratulations to the Randall family. So if there was a theater, an outdoor, like a drive-in that was showing the Sound of Music and you were allowed to ride your horse to the theater, would you do that? Would you kill all your birds with one stone?
That would be my hell. Quite honestly, it really would. Hey, Lisa, what's going on?
Okay, so on our first anniversary, my wedding anniversary, 35 years ago, I thought it would be a really good idea to go horseback riding for the first time. It was the first and last time I ever went horseback riding. I spent the evening in a hot tub soaking because everything ached.
Oh.
So like you, Wendy, I just pet them. I feed them sugar cubes and apples. They're beautiful creatures.
Yeah, they are gorgeous. Handsome.
Yes, but once I got up on that horse, probably within like 5 seconds, I realized I had made a mistake.
It's too high up. I mean, I'd do a pony ride, but that poor pony would not have fun.
Right.
They're too big.
It was, and I'm afraid of heights, so I didn't know what I would do if I would fall. I was teetering back and forth, and then they galloped. Oh, the galloping was really
my God.
Bad.
I was hanging on to the horse's neck. Like my arms around
I'm
the
sure,
neck,
yeah,
like trying not to fall off.
Absolutely.
You didn't fall, yeah.
I'm glad you got to try it once, Lisa. I wish it had gone better for you.
Yeah, I'll just stick to riding bicycles. That's good enough for me.
Yeah. All right.
Thanks again,
Lisa. Tell me what this means. I'll never forget this. Like I said, the lessons that I took were at in Tinley Park. They had a stable in Tinley Park. So one of the horses, because when you'd walk through the stable, the horse's name was on a wooden plaque by his stall, his or her stall. So one of them was called Sergeant Pepper, and I remember that because, I'm a big Beatles fan. So as they were giving the different riders in the class their horses for the day, I said to one of the guys, can I ride Sergeant Pepper? And he's standing next to another guy who works at the stable, and they look at each other and they raise their eyebrows, and one of the guys says, and I remember this is like 40 some odd years ago, he goes, "Somebody's going to break Sergeant Pepper. Is it going to be you?" And they both guys laughed. And I have no idea to this day what he's talking about. What does that mean?
You know what that means?
No, I don't know what that means.
We have to break a horse or a colt. Like
does that mean get them ready to ride?
They've never been ridden before.
No one's ridden them before.
Oh, is that what he means?
So they were trying to intimidate you like the horse is going to throw you off.
Oh, all right. That's not as bad as I had no idea what he was talking about. I'm like, yeah, so I'll break the pepper. Put me on the pepper. I'll break the pepper.
I'll crack the pepper.
Yeah.
Why do you think it's called Lonely Hearts Club Band?
Right, that's true. Very true. Let's do this. We'll take a quick break, and then there's more to discuss. Stay where you are. Oh.
Hello.
Where'd he come from? I saw Joker last night, and I have something to say.
Okay.
I have something to say. So that's coming up next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. All right, Wendy, last night I went to see the movie Joker. And the reason I say this is there's one very important element that I want to discuss. But leading up to this, for people who don't know, and I'm sure everybody does at this point, aside from being the backstory to the character Joker that we know from Batman comics and TV shows and movies, it really is a study in a guy who just is a total outsider, whose society just shuns, he doesn't fit in. And it tells that story marvelously. The side story to all that is, again, I'm sure everyone's aware, is that a lot of people were afraid that this movie could in some way incite violence, that somebody could see what was going on in the screen and say, yeah, that guy's just like me, and he's using guns and he's using weapons to harm anyone around him, and that could possibly, you know, fire somebody up to do something horrible. Because of that, a lot of theaters have brought in extra security, including, I saw it in the Evanston theaters, as you come into the theater, there was a police SUV parked in the space right in front of the theater. And I have seen it. This is the first time I've seen the movie Joker. But this weekend, they had made a practice of doing exactly that, putting a police vehicle prominently in front of the theater. I guess to dissuade anybody who's even thinking about doing anything from doing anything, just saying there's a police presence. I didn't see any police officers once inside the theater, either in the lobby or in the theater, but it was their way of saying we're doing our best to take care of a situation that could happen or couldn't happen. That said, the crowd that I saw it with, and it was a pretty full house last night, was incredibly well-behaved. Like, way more than any movie I remember in recent times, which was very surprising to me. They were just, they played everything by the rule. Everybody was kind to each other. There was no talking, very little texting during the movie. Everybody was on their best behavior. But the thing that stood out the most for me was this. There's a message that comes through loud and clear in the movie. And at first, it's just kind of implied. But then later on, it's vocalized by the character that Joaquin Phoenix plays. It's a transitional between this guy who has mental illness and him becoming the Joker. And what that message is, and he finally comes right out and says it. There, he's got a couple scenes where he's seeing a counselor and he's explaining to this woman what his life is like. And he says that for a long time, he didn't know he existed. He said, I was walking through life and I didn't know if I was really there, if I was even existing. But then, since he's been on this violent spree where he's killing people, he said, now I feel like I'm making a difference. I feel like I'm alive and stuff like that.
I knew you were going to say
that. And that's troubling.
Yes.
Because even though I'm sure that that holds true, that for people who do horrible, horrible things, and to list them would be impossible because there's been so many over the years, I'm positive that there's an element to that. And the people who do the horrible things, that they're kind of just... they're kind of existing and they're not a part of anything.
Blending
and then
in.
All of a sudden, through their acts, they're a big part of society. I just kind of wish that that wasn't vocalized, because I'm not saying that it glorified that kind of behavior, but it certainly is a tip of the cap saying there's something to that. You might be one of those people out there who just doesn't seem like they matter, and there's a way to matter. And that's the part that I found very disturbing. That was a message I wasn't comfortable with.
But the majority of people who see a violent movie are not going to follow through with it.
Absolutely.
I mean, you know what movie I think of a lot? Michael Douglas and Falling Down many years ago. It's just, you know what? I've had enough of this crap.
Yeah.
And I know it's a different time now, but a movie... I just am so frustrated with it, because I know I heard Dean, and I'm going to ask you too. Did you like it, first of all?
I liked it. I didn't love it, but much like Dean, where
liking it. He loved it.
I don't feel guilty about liking it, and it's. I don't think it's a great movie. I think Joaquin Phoenix's performance is amazing, because as you're watching that guy kind of unfold, you know that. Everyone knows that guy. You see that guy every day. When if you walk around anywhere, you see people that you can just tell are just so totally disenfranchised with the life around them, and you don't know what to do for those people, you know? And all through the movie, I kept thinking, that guy that I'm watching on screen, that's a guy that I've seen 1,000 times
not
in my life.
Not me.
You don't?
I'd honestly.
Really?
And if it's someone I knew or something, I mean, you know, it's a weird thing because you can go up to someone, and we can ask Dr. John Duffy about this next week. You know, you go up and say, hey, you know what? You're not yourself. How can I help? If they don't want the help, they're going to go, oh, I'm fine.
Right.
So I don't know what to do to help people, but I haven't come across people that are just so far gone.
But maybe not to the extent that this particular guy is in the movie, but haven't you just, like, walking around the streets of Chicago, don't you from time to time see people where you just say to yourself, I don't know how those people survive. They just seem so lost, and there's, sadly, you go, I don't know what I can possibly do. Except not to ignore them. Like, one of his problems, one of Arthur Fleck's problems in the movie, is that he's ignored by almost everybody, and the people who aren't ignoring him are making fun of him and belittling him. And I said this when Dean was on the other day, maybe this will create some sort of an awareness for people when you see those people to not just giggle and laugh and point at him and go, look at this guy. What's up with this guy? Because that the movie is showing that on a daily basis, wherever he went, somebody was doing that to him and he snapped.
I have years ago when I worked early mornings at a station you worked at. There was a homeless woman, Veronica, and she was out there every day. And a couple days I gave her money, and then I said, listen, I come this route.
Yeah.
I'm going to see you every day.
Yeah.
I'm not going to give you money every day because I don't have that kind of money. If I had that kind of money, I wouldn't be up at this hour leaving my kids at home.
Right, sure.
And she totally got it, and she would walk me to work every day.
Oh.
We ended up talking.
Yeah.
And honestly, and I had asked her, too, where do you sleep? And she's like, sometimes at my uncle's, sometimes on Lower Wacker Drive. So she wasn't 100% homeless.
Sure.
But there are some other people that, you're right, they just, even there are people driving in every day who will come up to the side of the car and it's like, hey, no money today. Listen, have a great day.
Yeah.
Just to acknowledge them.
Yeah.
That's all I try to do.
Right.
And if I have an extra couple bucks, I'll do it.
Well, that's noble. And that's what you, if you,
I don't know what else to do.
That's the thing, is you don't know what else to do. Also, I know Dean had mentioned this, but they show how the funding is cut. This character, Arthur Fleck, is seeing a counselor, and that's what's keeping him kind of on the path a little bit. But there's budget cuts, and they explain to him, we can't do this anymore. You know, we have to stop the counseling.
So he's out high and dry, which so many people are.
That's the thing, is that's such a reflection of what's going on in real life right now. And I asked Dean, I said, we've had movie characters before that are down and out and violent and shoot things up. Why is this so different? And I think what's different now after seeing the movie is, it's so reflective. It's not like a comic book movie where, remember on Batman when the Joker would show up, he would shoot giant purple gas in the
right.
air and people would fall down. The fact that he has mental illness and a weapon, and it's, you know, it's that lethal combination that anytime these things happen, it's debated back and forth. A little bit of this, a little more of that. What do we do? How do we fix it? It's that lethal combination that the movie just draws on to tell its story.
My question is, when did Batman go from being goofy, silly, and campy to this deep, dark side of it?
Well, there's always been different versions, Steve.
But why did it go
that
route?
Exactly when. You know who led the way was Pee-wee Herman.
What?
When Pee-wee Herman appeared in the early Batman movie.
Yeah, as the Penguin.
Wasn't he just some guy pushing a stroller with... He wasn't...
He was the Penguin's father, I think.
He was just, yeah, it was some...
Penguin's father.
Not quite a cameo, but a very small appearance.
Right. As a favor for Tim Burton.
So that flipped. That went from wacky
to... Oh, that did go dark.
Yeah.
But why did it? Why didn't we keep Batman how he was?
It's just a different version of the story.
But why did we have to spin...
Oh, make it so dark?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think because the audience for Batman or Batman characters had already seen its limit in you know, the more comic booky style. So this is a much darker version. It's also, I'll say this really quick, it's so interesting that Robert De Niro's in this movie. He plays like a Johnny Carson type. He's got a show that's like The Tonight Show, but it's based in Gotham City. Because his character, Travis Bickle, 40 years ago, was this guy. I mean, he was the same.
King of Comedy.
Alienated. And then in King of Comedy, even more so, yeah.
Yeah.
So I recommend the movie, but the message to me, that one message was a little troublesome. You know, that if you want to reach some sort of acclaim, do something horrible.
Yeah.
It's a hard message to convey. Thanks, Steve. Hi, everybody. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. Do you want to reach us during the show? You can get us. You can call us or text us. 312-981-7200 is the way to do it. Wendy, let's talk about regrets for a little bit. I found this article.
I've had a few.
Have you had a couple regrets? I found an article at bestlife.com called 50 Regrets, All Too Common Among People Over 50. Yeah. These are the top regrets of people 50 and over.
Is your goal to make me feel bad about myself today?
No.
I'm sure I can say yes to all 50.
Well, let's start out with number one, because it's something you did, and that is quit school. You have said many times you are not a college graduate. At some point, you just decided school wasn't for you.
I'm a college graduate.
You are?
I have an associate's degree. That counts for something.
Nah.
Jeez.
Oh, wow.
I never quit school. I mean, I quit ISU because I was going to get kicked out if I didn't quit, but I went on and got an associate's degree at Triton College, and then I started working in radio.
Oh,
so
you're a success story.
Yeah, ouch. Yeah. You should regret that.
I don't. I should.
Let's replay it. What did you say that was wrong, Bill?
Okay, wait. You can't flip-flop.
Sure, I can. That's what I love about this job.
But when you quit ISU, have you ever thought about, oh, you know what? If I had stayed,
no, I didn't.
You never
I hated
knew?
It.
Yeah.
I was homesick.
Yeah.
I couldn't get on.
There were horses.
No, but I couldn't get on the radio station until I was an upperclassman. So I left and went to Triton College. And I've been in radio 33 years, so I think I'm a success
story.
You're
a success story.
You made a very good decision.
Yep.
Jeez, so Bill, ouch.
I will check the no box on that one, quitting school. Don't you think, though, for most people, if they quit school at some point, they go, I had two more years, I should have stuck it out.
It depends what you're doing. If you make your life a success doing what's in your heart, I don't think anybody looks back.
Yeah. Well, I already know the answer to number two, based on what you told me for number one. Not accomplishing more. You've accomplished plenty.
Oh, now you're trying to make yourself feel
too
better.
Much. I can't imagine how you could accomplish anything more,
It's impossible.
Wendy. I mean, you are on Mount Accomplish.
Yeah. I don't even
You guys are on Mount BS.
So do you ever regret?
There are many things I feel like I could have accomplished.
What would you like to if you had a list of accomplishments that you have not yet done but could it someday do, what would be the number one accomplishment you hope to pull off?
I feel like I could have been a better mother. I'm still mothering, but I feel like I could have done things differently.
Well, maybe number three will be your lucky charm.
Here come the horses.
I'm going home.
Number three. Not trying to land that dream job. You have landed that dream job.
Again, can you stop using me? Why don't you delve into your inner soul for a moment and talk about you? I have a mouth that I use quite frequently.
Number four.
This is my dream job, by the way.
I'm going to listen to the bonus hour today.
Can I just say, though, honestly, I've worked for many stations with many people, and you are my favorite partner.
Oh, my gosh.
That's so nice of you. Thank you, Wendy.
Wow. I enjoy you immensely as well, Bertrand.
Number four. These are common regrets among people aged 50 or over. As they reach that half century mark, they look back and they say, I wish I could have done this. I should have done that.
That's a time of reflection, for sure.
It is, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's like a wake-up call.
I couldn't even talk to you prior to turning 50. You're like, don't talk about
upsetting.
My birthday. Don't do anything
it's
for my
upsetting.
Birthday. But then you turned it, and it didn't feel any different, did it?
Nah, it did. But at some point, you just go, you got to give into it.
Yeah, I guess.
You got to go, it was inevitable.
You were adamant about, don't even mention
it
on the air.
Well, but I'm like that with all my birthdays. I don't like to make
a
big deal.
This one was way different.
Well, because this is the one where you take stock in it all. You go, oh, boy, I'm halfway to 100, and I might not see 100. So I better go to Chuck E. Cheese today. I'm not messing around anymore.
50 more times just to get them out of the way.
Yes.
This is my 98th birthday party.
Get them all done at once. This one makes so much sense. I imagine a lot of people feel this from 50 on, the regret of having worked too much in your lifetime.
Well,
don't you think?
I do know something. You know, there have been numerous studies of when people are on their deathbed and it's like, you know, do you have any regrets? And it's like, yeah, I wish I would have worked less and enjoyed my life more.
That's the cliche, right? No one ever says, I wish I'd spent more time at the office.
Well, that's true. And, you know, it's not what you have. It's who you're with. And that's another thing.
Yep.
So, you know, I feel bad. You know, our kids have been raised in the era of both working parents.
Yes.
And, yeah, I mean, sometimes I may give in a little to them because I feel guilty about not being around enough.
But don't you think of the ones we've mentioned so far, of the biggest regrets we've mentioned so far, this is one that you don't really have that much control over, because even if you figure that out, say you figure that out at 35 or 40, I shouldn't work as much as I do. I got to spend more time with my family or doing what I love and not going into the office all the time. So mention that to your boss and see how it goes.
Well, that's what I mean. You will not be able to afford your house, so then that'll be worse.
Right.
And it's usually that time you have to think about sending your kids to college, and you're like, okay, I have to keep working because I have to get the money to send them to college. Yeah,
that's why I suggest people don't quit school, because I didn't. And I suggest following your heart and trying to get something that you love to do, because then when you come to work every day, it's not a chore.
Yes. Very wise, Wendy. Like an owl. Very owly today. This one is so sad, but so true.
Oh, God.
These are the regrets. What?
You're just depressing me, and you're turning everything on me.
They're regret. Well, because you're here.
Well, so are you.
I'm barely here. I'm here in shape only.
Here, give me the sad one.
Not saving more.
Oh, I don't regret that.
Don't you?
No. It's more fun to spend.
It's a lot more fun to spend, but then at some point you figure out, oh, I'm almost at retirement age, and I only have $311. What am I going to do now?
Well, first of all, you should have saved a little more than that.
Yes.
Second of all, you know, it's one of those things where a lot of kids today think, oh, you know, I hope my parents give me this big inheritance.
Right.
I hope people's parents spend their money because they've worked so hard for it.
Yeah.
And they should enjoy it. And if you save for a rainy day and that rainy day never comes, you know, I mean, who knows how long you're going to live? You should have something
in
case of an emergency. But what do they say? Like, an emergency fund is like three of your paychecks or something.
Well, how are you going to retire if you don't save money? Wendy?
I will never be able to retire ever. And
well,
why should I?
Why should you?
Yeah.
Well, I plan on retiring.
I don't.
Never, ever?
What would I do?
I can't afford to.
Well, I'm participating in my 401k, so, you know, I can maybe get my dream job at Trader Joe's just part-time to keep things going.
I have a 1K. I don't have anywhere near the K you have.
Just stay here. You could beat Orion's record.
Yeah.
Well,
you probably couldn't. I don't think anybody can beat
that.
I love doing this.
Yeah, right.
As long as people will listen to me, you know me, I will keep talking.
Yep.
If not, I'm going to start a whole new Uber thing where you get in my car and I just monologue.
That'll be
great. I pay you to come in my car.
That's a great business model. But don't you already know people who are your age?
Yeah,
who have already retired.
I know people my age who are grandparents already. It's just everybody's life is different, but I don't plan on retiring, and thankfully you don't either, so we can just keep working.
Right.
Well, but I think,
that was astound.
What?
Well,
astute.
I mean, you have a very short day.
Yes, you're right.
So that's very different.
Yeah. For people who put in factory hour days, they're counting the minutes till retirement.
But that falls into do what you love again.
Yes.
It's unfortunate. A lot of people work, you know, 10-hour days because that's what they chose as their career. And at some point, this is what I do. I got to keep doing it. So I understand their desire to retire.
Yeah.
Dr. Seuss.
This is one, Wendy, I will take your advice and I will jump in on this one. I know this won't be a regret for myself, but for many people over the age of 50, this is one of their biggest regrets, not taking vacations enough during their lifetime. I've been very fortunate.
Make a point. Good for you.
I love that. You know, going away with either just my wife or my wife and kids, that's always been a constant in my universe, and I don't regret a minute of that. A little bit more, I would, you know, there's places that I haven't been that I'd love to go. I've
Steve Bertrand Travel.
Yeah, we'd go to, through Steve Bertrand you Travel.
Go to Croatia with Dave Ennett in July if you'd like.
That's always been on my bucket list, to see Croatia with Dave Ennett. I would do that.
I know a bunch of swear words in Croatian. I can.
I would bring you along.
Do you have to be there to say them, or can you say them here?
I can't say them on the air.
Oh, no.
But we can send a telegram with swear words.
Yeah.
All right, we'll do that.
I don't travel very much, and that's not.
Do you
something
kind of feel bad about that?
I'm not a lover of. I like it when I'm there. It's just so hectic getting things ready and.
But don't you do this when, like, I know that the travel part of it for a lot of people, they go, oh, it's a, you got to fly 8 hours and then you get to the airport to the hotel. That's an hour, stuff like that. But I always just look at it as a miracle, the fact that you can be
in
the United States one day and in Belgium the next.
I'm so glad you said that, because I was thinking the exact same thing. And we have a trip coming up in later this year where there's like a 5-hour layover.
Yeah.
And I'm already dreading it. And I should be thinking, this is magic.
Yes.
You know, I'm sitting here for a few hours, but then I'm going to be a half a world away.
So do you just stay in the airport for 5 hours, or can you go?
I don't know.
He refuses to think about it.
Right. I'm just going to dwell on the magic part.
You should stay in the airport, because you would fixate on what if I don't get back to the airport in time.
Me, yes.
But I would be like that too, Wendy.
But see, honestly, that's why sometimes it's hard for me to let go and have fun, because it's stressful getting things ready for a trip. And then I like a trip where I'm just on a beach or on a resort where I can drink by the pool.
Yeah.
I don't like a schedule where you have to go do these things. I kind of want to just, let's go with the flow.
Do it at your own pace. Right.
But never have I been on a vacation. There's always been something planned. If we do Disney, it's like you got to stay on this thing.
Yes.
You go to Hawaii, you got to go to these sites. So it's a lot of stress.
But you do have the option of saying no to that.
I know, but you figure if you're there, you may as well see these things.
Yeah. Let's take a quick break and then more of the biggest regrets.
I have no fun. That's just it. I can't relax enough
regret?
To have fun.
All right, we'll discuss this further next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. All right, it's us. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. We can be reached at 312-981-7200 over at bestlife.com. They asked a whole bunch of people aged 50 and over, what are your biggest regrets? You're looking back on your life. What are the things you would have done a little bit differently? So we're discussing them. You can too. How about this one, Wendy? Not being more adventurous.
I am so not adventurous, and I don't know that I regret it.
What's the
I really
most
don't.
Adventurous thing you've done, would you say?
Whitewater rafting.
That's adventurous.
I'll never do it again. Riding a bicycle down the crater at Haleakala.
Yeah,
I'll never do that again. Both times I thought I was going to die. Freaked out.
But isn't there some sense of accomplishment once you've done them? And there's some adrenaline rush where you say, I can see where people enjoy this sort of thing.
I liked when it was finished and I was relieved that I didn't die.
Yes.
And then I was like, that was cool. And Jimmy Mack said, would you do it again? No. Why
Won
should
it
I?
Out. You've accomplished it. Move on to the next task.
I'd like Lara to play Croft. It safe.
Number 10 is very similar to number 9, in my opinion. Well, it is and it isn't. Not being more spontaneous.
I used to be. Boy, I used to be fun pre-30.
What happened to you?
I became a mom.
Is that what it is? It
sucked everything out of me. Because you have to worry more.
Well, yeah, there's more worry, but you can still be semi-adventurous and semi-spontaneous.
I won't be adventurous. I need to be more spontaneous. Because when you think of things and it's like all of a sudden, one night I decided, hey, let's grab a bunch of friends and go miniature golfing.
Yes.
And the boys brought friends and we had a great time.
Yeah.
And it was just thought of like 15 minutes before.
Right.
It seems like those spontaneous things are almost always more fun than something you have planned.
Right. Do you remember, I will use childhood as an example for this. Remember as a kid, on a day, let's say it was a Saturday or a summer day, you didn't have anything planned.
Right.
You would just go to somebody's house, you'd ring their doorbell, knock on their door, the kid would show up, and then you would just do something. There was no plan in place. You know how now you have to make a play date, and you have to realize who's going to be where, when, and how long they'll play until, and it ends at 2 o'clock. Don't you kind of miss that element of anything can happen, Steve?
It wasn't just as kids when we were younger. Families would just show up at each other's houses.
Right. Now, if your doorbell rings, you hide. You're like,
yeah, I don't
who's
get it.
Coming
yeah.
to our house
then,
now?
You know, that, as a kid, it was the best. Like, your aunt and uncle would come over, and then they wouldn't leave.
Right.
You know, and then if
right.
they stayed late enough, you knew your mom would have to order pizza.
Yeah, that's true. That was fun. But it is so funny, and I know Sebastian Maniscalco talks about this, and it's the doorbell rings. But I swear to God, it rang the other night, and we all looked at each other like,
who is this?
A, are you expecting anyone? Two, who's going to get it?
Yes.
It was just Amazon dropping something
oh.
off. Thank
oh.
God.
Did you hug the guy?
No.
We thought it was our neighbors.
He skedaddled. He just rings the bell, leaves it there, runs. And moves along.
But where did spontaneity go? Everything is so planned out now. No, nothing just happens spur of the moment
or
anymore.
You have to text them before you drop something off at their house.
Yeah.
You can't even.
Yeah. yeah.
It's true. Well, sit in the driveway and text.
I text people to see if I can call them.
Right,
you know,
that's
the
thing now.
Do you have time to talk?
Oh my God, someone just said that. Heck, today you practically have to make an appointment to make a phone call with someone.
Yes.
Yeah, my husband does that to me. Can you talk? Is this a good time? I get that too. You say no.
Why did that have to happen? Things were going pretty well.
Because the world changed, Bill.
I liked it the old way.
I'm with you.
I
Let's go back.
To back the old way. There's friends of ours who call us. It's always same day. Hey, you guys have any dinner plans? We don't. Let's go out and eat. And we go out and eat. And it's great. And then we have other friends. You know, if you don't do it 6 months in advance, you're out of luck.
We're going to go drive by such and such's house and see what's going on.
Yeah.
Just
although,
pull in.
Then there's Bertrand who says, yes, we should go make dinner plans, but then doesn't.
But Steve does always follow through.
Now
he does. It
doesn't
happen immediately, but it does always happen.
Well, because for a lot of me, it's like that's like saying, hey, how you doing? You know, there's something. We should get together.
Yeah, that is a crutch.
So, I didn't realize how serious Bill is when he suggests it.
Yeah.
Oh, he pulls out his little date book.
If somebody says, let's go out, I pinpoint a time and a place.
And then I clench. I'm like, oh, what did I say?
Brian wants to talk about spontaneity. Hey, Brian.
Hey, yeah, I'm just saying that the spontaneity thing is, I can't believe I did that back then, because nowadays I would never, ever do that. But
what'd you
which
do?
Which part?
Dating my wife, we went on a trip towards California. We just started driving down Route 66 across the country. We had no hotel reservations. We had no plans. We just stopped wherever we stopped, found a hotel where we found one, and we stayed in, like, Missouri. I stayed in Albuquerque, we stayed at Santa Barbara. I mean, we had
no timetable or anything?
No timetable,
that's
no
awesome.
Reservations, nothing.
There's no way you could do that now, is there?
Well, I think probably there is, but it was just so fun doing it back then because we just didn't know where we'd end up.
Yes.
And we just ended up the coolest places. I mean, one of the things that we did when we got in, like, to, like, near Arizona area, she talked about going to the Grand Canyon, and I was like, that's boring. Let's see the Grand Canyon. Went and saw it. It was gorgeous. And
Bill, tell Brian what you thought of the Grand Canyon.
Just a hole in the ground. Big hole in the ground.
Well, see, the weird thing for me is when we got out there, and you get there and you have viewing areas where you've got little railings and stuff, you're looking around. We drove further back into it, and I can't believe, I was like, you're 24 years old. We got to an area that was not one of the areas with all the railings and whatever else.
Yeah.
And I wanted her to take a picture of me by the edge of the canyon, and there was a tree by the edge of the canyon. I grabbed onto a limb and hung over the edge.
Goofball.
Wow.
And she's like, don't do that. Don't. I said, take the picture. Take the picture. So she did. I mean, I could have, like, died in a second.
That's
it. On the way out there to Arizona, we ran into a place that was the, what was it here? Remember the TV show F Troop?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Brian, we got like 20 seconds here.
Okay, wait. They had the 4th from F Troop was there. We had pictures of the 4th from F Troop and all these places they never would have even thought of going to.
Oh,
great.
That's excellent. I'm glad it worked out,
thank
Brian.
Thank you for sharing that. That is fun to just do it, but I don't know who could just get in a car and get away anymore.
Right.
Good luck, Brian. I hope you get to do it again.
Oh, I was hoping Larry Storch was in that story. I heard F Troop. I got so excited. All right, it's the news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. Stay tuned.
We would like to congratulate Chris from Algonquin. He was the 11th caller and walked away with 4-pack of movie passes to Classic Cinemas. And you can go to classiccinemas.com. I believe we are going to give some more passes away when we head out to Tree Time in Lake Barrington next Thursday.
So come and see us. It's Thursday already, a week from tomorrow.
I know.
It's fast. Look who's here, Wendy. It's Dane Neal. Ooh. Hi, Dane.
Yeah. Well, I know that there's a lot of listeners that are along with me in solidarity, joining Wendy in the our support group, our horseback averse support group. Because I got to say, for something, there's things that people can come down on one side or another, whether it's everybody hates kale, right? Or half the people like this thing or that thing. Mm-hmm. Horseback riding has this place, and I'm not sure if it's the big horseback lobby group that just put it out. This is fun. Like, it's orange juice is not for breakfast or whatever the thing. But I can't think of a more unpleasant experience than riding.
Really? I'm shocked to hear you say that.
Well,
I just was scared.
I was thrown off that Steve loves the smell, because he really actually made a case for it. It wasn't like, hey,
the sweet smell, I believe. That's what he said.
He didn't even just say, it doesn't bother me.
Right.
He's like, I rather prefer it.
But Steve's cologne, that stable cologne that he had a year ago, tanked. Nobody bought it, remember?
The stable boy cologne setup.
And, it came and went in a year.
Yeah.
Awful.
Yeah. So here's the thing, too, is one of the times I got stuck having to do this horseback situation. He had to ride him there in a line, and the horse in front of me, these are big, powerful, dangerous animals. I won't use the word afraid, because obviously, like I said, widely regarded as a tough guy. The horse in front hated the horse in back. Oh, stay away, Sally hates whatever the other name was.
Yeah.
Sundance or something.
Yeah.
And so for the whole 3-hour ride, the one kept looking for opportunities to kick backwards kick the other horse. So it kicked me a couple times in the foot, and then we had to ride up a mountain, which was terrifying, and then in the water, which all sounds awesome.
Yeah, but it's not.
Not for me.
I'm sorry you had to endure this, Dane.
Yeah.
You'll recover. I know you.
Wendy brought it all back, but I love to see that there's other people out there.
It's not just you.
I was alone.
No, you're never just alone.
Yep.
All right, let's talk food. Dane, what's going on?
Well, in studio, there's a lot of great events and a lot of great causes out there when it comes to the food situation. We share a lot of them. There is none better, especially in the suburbs, than the West Suburban Community Pantry and the work that they do supporting the food community, the food insecure. I mean, it's a regular community pantry, but they do a ton of stuff, a lot of different programs. They got a big event coming up we'll talk about a little bit later. But Laura Coyle, the executive director, and Gina Borman, one of the board members, in studio today to talk not only about the pantry and a little later about the big event.
Excellent.
Hi, ladies. Thanks for coming
up. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Is what Dane said true?
About horses?
No. About everything.
Absolutely about the pantry. But horses, I don't know. I grew up on a farm, so I love horses.
An opposing viewpoint, Dane.
Very much opposing viewpoint.
Yeah.
It's all right. It's not popular. But the work that they're doing really is. And so if you want to, for those people that may not be aware, and I think that's one of the things now as we get a few years past what everybody considered was that huge kind of crash where everybody was feeling a little bit on the finance side. And so what I always thought was, kind of surprising is that people not only do not know that it's there, that it's available, or that whether they can use it or utilize it or even support it. So a little bit about the pantry would be great.
Yeah, so thanks, Dane. The West Suburban Community Pantry is located in Woodridge, Illinois, but we serve all of DuPage, and then we also serve Bolingbrook and Romeoville in Will counties. And this pantry has been in operation for over 40 years.
Oh my God, really?
Yeah, it started in a closet at St. Scholastica Church in Woodridge and grew over time to now we're in a 10,000 square foot warehouse, and we serve about 7,400 individuals in that area every year. And it's really just, a really community-based organization that is really just sort of deepened its relationship with the community and expanded over time.
And more people are in need of this, and there's a pride thing, I'm sure, sometimes that gets in the way of asking for help, isn't there?
Yeah, that's a great point. So we have, over the years, had a lot of people who have obviously come to us. They come through our doors and shop. But what we've realized, actually, in recent years especially, is that there's a huge portion of the population in need that won't come forward, and they won't come to a food pantry. And it's either because they're too proud, or they might have a little bit of fear of what's going to happen when they come to the food pantry, or there might be practical reasons, like they just don't have a car and they can't get there, or there's not public transportation that gets them there. So we've actually kind of changed. We thought about that a lot, and we're like, hey, if we really want to achieve our vision, which is a community without hunger, we need to not just offer our services to those people who are willing to come to us, but actually flip the model a little bit and start taking our services into the community.
Wow. Good idea. Very good idea.
So we've been working really hard on that. And, you know, we take mobile pantries into three communities now every month. We're piloting an online order system where people can order groceries through an online, basically, shopping site, kind of like Peapod or Amazon Fresh. And we deliver groceries to certain neighborhoods so that, you know, if you live in an area where there isn't public transportation or you are sort of like have a pride thing, it's a lot easier to pick out your phone and shop or go to the library and use a computer if you don't have access to a phone and shop and then have the groceries brought to you.
Yep.
So we're really trying a lot of different approaches to make sure we can achieve that vision.
Gina, who's eligible?
Anybody that lives in DuPage County and then areas of Will County that we service as well.
Yeah.
We do a backpack program, too, that I think is really cool for some of the school districts where we provide the groceries and the backpack for the kid over the weekend because the nurses were saying that the kids were coming to school with headaches on Monday.
That kills me.
Feeling good, and we realized that that's what it was. So the backpack program started, and that's awesome. So
yeah. I want to volunteer. I'm looking that there are volunteer, or if you don't have time to, you can donate as well. What's the best website to send people to?
Yeah, it's, thank you for asking. It's wscpantry.org. So wscpantry.org.
And you mentioned, and I think there is a little bit of mystery about it that may lead to that apprehension of people not going that extra step to kind of explore it. So what is the process? So people can understand like what to expect if they do get involved, if they show up, you know, how does it work? How do you sign up? Do you sign up or do you just move through and get the things that you need?
Yeah. So there's a couple of different approaches. So if you actually come to the pantry itself, and this is probably similar. There's pantries all over. There's pantries in Cook County. There's pantries out in DuPage and Will, all over the place. And they all pretty much operate similarly. If you show up, you typically need to show proof of residency that you are in the area, like Gina said, that we serve. And then you'll get asked a couple of questions about, you know, where you live, how many people in your family, that type of thing. It's all voluntary to share that type of information. And then you shop and you get groceries.
You take what you need and you...
Yep, you take what you need and...
If people want to donate, what should they bring and what shouldn't they bring?
I mean, try to bring things that aren't expired.
Yeah.
a lot of times, you know, unfortunately, people clean out their own pantries. And so try to bring things that are still... have a reasonable amount of code date left to them. But things like peanut butter, tuna fish, those types of
boxed potato
proteins,
mixes,
boxed potatoes, yeah,
boxed
anything.
Hamburger helper.
Yep.
That's
absolutely.
A great one.
Pasta, spaghetti sauce, yep.
And paper towels, napkins, tissues, diapers, baby wipes.
Diapers and baby wipes are huge for us. We have so many clients with small children.
Yeah.
And we provide as many diapers as we can, but we're reliant on donations to hand those out.
Clothes or no clothes?
We don't typically do clothes. There are a lot of organizations that do, so
yeah.
We can help you find one if you want to donate clothes. We do winter coats, hats, and gloves during those November through March, basically.
Yeah.
And then Gina is here too, Gina Borman, one of the board members, and talk a little bit about it because, you know, Laura can say and her staff and the volunteers are great and have a great vision for what they want to do. But I think it takes kind of buy-in and participation from the business community and just from other kind of leaders out there in the community to kind of get involved. And so talk about either your role or the board and why you think it's important for people to get involved that way.
Sure. So we started off with a program called Move for Hunger. We're a part of the moving business. And when people are moving, a lot of times they don't want to take their non-perishable food items. So we take those non-perishable food items and then donate them to the pantry. So that started about 6-7 years ago. And I was dropping off food and I stayed a little bit too long one day and they asked me to be on the board. but it's changed my life. It's amazing. And it's just such a good way to give back to the community and, you know, as a business, you know, business owner and involved in the business community, sometimes we get wrapped up in the day-to-day of doing the job, and it's nice to go give back and to do something for a cause other than just making money. So, you know, we as an organization, we go and we volunteer with our staff. You can do that. We have several companies that volunteer with the staff, and they go in and they take their employees and they volunteer for the day at the pantry, which is awesome. And I encourage anybody to do that because it's a really fun experience, team building too, you know. So, yeah, I mean, it's just a really good way to be involved in your community. You shouldn't do it for the wrong reasons, but, you know, it looks good. You look good as a company when you do it, too.
Give the website out one more time for people.
Yeah, it's wscpantry.org.
Excellent. Let's take a quick break and then more discussion. Dane Neal is here. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. Dane Neal stops by every other Wednesday, and we talk about the world of food. The world of food, Dane.
Yep.
Let's talk about the Chef's Culinary Challenge.
Yeah, the epicenter of the world of food is converging, coming up on October 20th for this event. And got to give a shout out. This is, you know, all about the, you know, the pantry and all the things that they do. It raises not only awareness for what they do, but a whole bunch of dollars, goodwill. And as a guy who has emceed, attended, judged, like, events from coast to coast, it has turned out to be one of the really great events that we have in the Chicagoland area. And so I got to give a shout out to Paula Gleason, who is somebody who's been a part of the pantry for a long time. She came to me back, I think it was 2012, and said she had it wasn't a crazy idea, but she had this idea. She wanted to build an event that would support the pantry, that would highlight the culinary side of things,
nice.
Suburban chefs. And so, you know, we worked together to put the thing together, and she has been a tireless, you know, proponent and star for it. And it's big now, and it's going into, I don't know, how many years has it been? I've been there since the beginning. It's gotten bigger and better every year.
Yeah, we're heading into our eighth year. And if you come only to meet Paula, like, yeah, that is worth it.
Right? Come
Paula
early, get in line, right?
Amazing woman. She always wears a hat. She's, like, just this wonderful, wonderful person. Yeah, it's a great event. We've been really successful over time. We're really excited about this year. This year's theme is Epicurean Chicago, so it's all of the flavors of the Chicago neighborhoods.
Wow.
And there's some great chefs on board to support the cause.
Yeah.
Someone wants to know if you take pet food at your place.
We do, actually.
Okay.
We do.
I just wanted to get that in there.
I think my little brother ate cat food for a while.
Oh, he did?
So, yeah, so I think there's probably...
four family pets. I mean, sadly, can I tell a little sadness story? But when people end up in times of great need, you know, they don't want to have to give up their pets,
right,
because they have to make a choice between feeding their kids and feeding their pet. And so it's really actually a huge need to make sure that they can keep Fido through all this trouble.
So at the event, Fido won't be there.
Oh, he will
but
not.
There's still some tickets available for human participants to enjoy the evening. And what's great about it is it's got all of these different stations represented by great chefs and great places. And this year, and sometimes it's countries, sometimes it's food styles, sometimes it's different demographics. And this time, each one is representing like a different kind of neighborhood and kind of food style within Chicago, right? So Laura, maybe fill people in on the different areas?
Yeah, so we're going to have Albany Park represented, Pilsen represented, Wicker Park represented, Little Italy, the Gold Coast, Streeterville. All of those neighborhoods of Chicago
will be
represented in the fair at the event, and we're just super excited about it. It's going to be a lot of fun.
And each of those places that you just mentioned, is there a different type of food from each, or is it just an amalgam of whatever foods they have in the area?
No, there's a different type of food from each area that'll be represented.
Oh, fantastic.
So, we're going to have pastas. We're going to have bibimbap. You know, we're going to have all kinds of different...
How did they... Because it's a competition, Bill, so there's some bragging rights here, and the people that attend get to not only try everything and enjoy it, but also vote. How do they decide? Because these are chefs that represent restaurants in the suburbs, typically around in the area for the pantry. Do you put them in a hat and they draw it? Like, I got Pilsen, you know, or do they choose and everybody kind of fights it out? Or is it one of those, like, a Thunderdome thing? How do they get a sign?
Thunderdome, and the throwdown is huge. It's like crazy town. No, no.
That's the name of the event.
Yeah.
No, so with this event in particular, because we knew it would be very, like, everybody was going to want these certain neighborhoods. So we basically made it like a sign up first and you get your choice of neighborhoods. And then once that neighborhood's taken, then, you know, you choose from what's left. So we made it sort of a competition in terms of, like, get in the door and get yourself signed up. And that worked really well. And these chefs are just amazing and generous. And
they get it, too. There are some events where, you know, we have just a great chef community that's involved in so many different things. And sometimes, though, it's just like, okay, get in there and do it. These guys are all, like, super in tune with everything that's going on, super in tune with the cause, with the pantry, with the support, what it means that what they're doing. So the food is great. They really step it up and try to do everything they can. But it's got all the kind of accoutrements and trappings of a great fundraiser and gala, too. So there'll be a live auction with some great stuff, right?
Yep,
and
there's going to be a live auction with some great items, a great, like, instant wine cellar, lots of fun stuff that you can vote on. We're going to have a champagne pull, so that's going to be a lot of fun.
It's really interactive. That's what I like. You know, some of those are become snooze fests where you just sit around and listen to speakers. But this is really interactive. You get to get up and, you know, try different foods. And it's great to, like, bring a client or someone like that because, you know, you're not just stuck staring at staring at them at the table, you know.
Right.
Yeah, it's actually fun. You know, it's not your average, like, rubber chicken dinner. It's actually really fun and great food.
I'll be emceeing again, and I will not bring the rubber chicken. They've got a rubber chicken detector at the door.
Come on. Yeah. Come on. Who won last year? Do we know who won last year?
It was La Meridian, the chef from La Meridian.
Yeah,
Chicago,
that's in Oak Brook, yeah. Yeah.
So once you win it, are you still eligible to compete, or is that it? Do they retire you?
Nope, you can win.
You can come back.
Multiple years in a row. Eddie Merlot's has won in the past.
Yeah.
So we've had a lot of great chefs.
But to your point, Laura, it's really strange because usually if there's a competition, it's very cutthroat. But for some reason, in the chefing community, everybody gets along and they do whatever they can to help each other. I don't get it.
Absolutely. I think they all want the bragging rights, but they're all in it for the right reason.
Yeah.
They know that, you know, food and food brings a lot of pleasure, and it's something that all families just have a right to enjoy. So.
All right. Give
Sunday, October 20th, right?
Absolutely.
Yep. And how can people get tickets? Is there a site?
You can go to the website. WSCPantry.org and get your tickets. There's still sponsorship opportunities available as well. So we encourage you to do that.
Laura and Gina, thank you both very much.
Dane,
thank you very much. More in a moment. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
I don't want to grow up on a toys racket. They got a million toys and Toys R Us that I can play with.
It's kind of quiet.
It's very quiet.
I was singing it earlier today.
That was you singing,
yes,
Wendy? That's beautiful.
I didn't have my microphone up on the way.
It's Bill F. and it's Wendy Snyder. Ryan Burrow has joined us in the newsroom to talk about some very important news.
Yeah, Toys R Us.
Oh, hang on.
There we go. There it is.
See, I have trouble with my microphones.
Yeah.
Toys R Us is back, actually. Good news, I suppose.
Why didn't you tell me this sooner? You have 24-hour permission, Ryan, to call me any time of the day or night whenever the story breaks. How did this happen? Why did this happen?
Well, here's the deal. You can go on ToysRUs.com right now. You could start yesterday, actually. And if you go to that website, the full-on Toys R Us logo is splashed on the front. They've got Jeffrey's Picks. They've got trending toys. They do have toy offers on there. Some of the hottest things, I think the last thing I saw, Nerf guns were up there. I'm not sure what all the other toys are that are big and hot and popular right now. But
Kindy Kinds. Treasure X, Aliens, I don't even know. Pop Hair Surprise.
Do they have Pop Hair Surprise?
They do.
Is this strictly an online venture, or will we be able to go into the stores like the old days?
Couple things going on right now. So this online format is, while operating under ToysRUs.com, is actually being, they call it, powered by Target.com. So the purchase you make, and if you're on the website right now, Wendy, if you click on one of those, it'll bring you to
Target.com.
Any purchase you make will be made through Target.com. You can go pick it up at Target locations or have it shipped to your home via Target. So basically, this is now just a front for the brand to get you to Target. Now, that being said, I can tell you that Toys R Us, well, actually True Kids, which operates the Toys R Us brand, is opening up two storefront locations, brick and mortar, one in New Jersey and one in Texas.
Oh, you're going to have to drive pretty far.
I don't care. I'll go.
They're gonna roll this out this fall, just in time for the holiday season.
The one in New Jersey will sell toys and hair care products.
There you go.
A lot of styling gel.
And they want no stereotypes there.
Nope.
What's one in Texas going to have? Tell me, quick.
Cowboy hat.
There we go. Cacti. Maybe some boots. Sure. Uh-huh.
You know, all right, Bill. I'm sure you have a lot of brick and mortar Toys R Us store stories.
Yes.
There's one out in Glenview or somewhere out there, and every time we would go to my in-laws and the boys were in the car while Jimmy Mack was driving, he'd go, "I bought my first action figure at that Toys R Us," sure. And we're all like, great.
Is it the one on Gulf Road?
Yeah, I think that is the one. Yeah. But, I mean, you have memories of these, too, don't you?
There was nothing better than just walking through a Toys R Us store for an hour. I just loved it as a kid, as an adult. Yeah. I loved it.
I used to buy Nintendo games at the one in Schaumburg, right there on, I guess that was also Gulf Road. And you'd go and you'd get your, you'd tear off the little piece of paper and you'd have to present it to a worker. Because they'd have to be the ones to open, to slide, to use the key to slide it open to give you, you know, Paperboy or Castlevania or whatever it is I was buying.
All right, here's a trivia question for you, Ryan. Wendy, I know you already know the answer. Before it was called Toys R Us, it was called?
I don't know. Oh.
You don't remember either, Wendy?
I remember the logo in my head.
The logo was a very thin man wearing a jacket and hat that had red and white stripes. Very thin.
Kind of like those air guys that flop around. That's kind of what he looked. Bargaintown.
Yeah, it was Bargaintown.
Okay. Really?
Yeah.
Huh.
Bargaintown, Bargaintown, Bargaintown. That's what they would say in the commercials to make you nervous. All right, we get it. You're Bargaintown.
Stress you out. I got to get a toy.
I know.
I tell you what, being inside of that store stressed me out sometimes. Did it? Being in that parking lot stressed
me
out.
Was that a hard sell for you to walk through a Toys R Us? Because I know people like that. It's too many toys.
Around Christmas time, forget about it.
The issue was always, look, now in this generation, in this world, and this is one of the things that we talked about with Sears as well, you go to the store, you look at the product. It was great that you could play with the product.
Yes.
Kids could pick it up and touch it.
Yes.
And then mom and dad would say, oh, we can find that cheaper online. Right? It's almost that location where you go just to see the product and then you go somewhere
else. Best Buy had the same kind of stigma where people would go to see the particulars of a certain product and they'd go, oh yeah, we'll get one of those and then order it.
Best Buy was smart though because they brought in the Geek Squad and now everyone who's over the age of 55, every time there's something wrong with their computer, brings it to Geek Squad and now you've got them in the door.
And Best Buy jumped on that too because they have a price match guarantee, which if Toys R Us did that, you would have purchased the item there.
Right. Oh, I did anyway, but for your more better educated consumer, they would look at it there and then go home and buy it
online.
Well,
you just didn't want to wait for it.
No, I wanted to play right then and there.
And that's what happens. That's why had they done that, I really think that would have made a difference. Because they were higher priced than other places.
Yeah, I mean, they've got a lot of things. I've talked to retail experts. I've talked to Dave Plyer about this before, too. And part of what makes a retail outlet unique is that you have exclusive products.
Yes.
Right? Something that no one else has. We've got this. No one else has this version. And I think Toys R Us never quite established that supply chain that separated them from, let's face it, Walmart now, Target now,
Target
all
exclusives.
Of these other places that have that. Now, what this presents, and it's kind of interesting, with partnering with Target.com is maybe the future of Toys R Us is living in Target or maybe other retail locations. We don't need the brick and mortar anymore, but now you buy your toys from Toys R Us inside of Target, much like you see CVS is the pharmacy that operates out of Target locations. That might be an avenue, and keep in mind, this is still the early stages here of the direction they go in.
But here's what's interesting about that. For a while, Toys R Us was doing that. They were fostering F.A.O. Schwartz. When F.A.O. Schwartz was a big toy store chain and they went under, Toys R Us said, well, we can help liquidate them a little bit. And they set up aisles in most Toys R Us stores called the F.A.O. Schwartz aisle that was selling mostly stuffed animals and plush toys and stuff, but other things.
Stuff made of metal and
how does that
razor
host
blades.
Company make money? Like if Target's giving an area to Toys R Us.
Because you're selling the rights to the name and the brand.
But it's not going
to
make a difference. If I'm at Target and I want, like right now, the top trending toy is Sesame Street Love to Hug Elmo Plush.
Yes.
I don't care.
Well, and we don't know what the deal has worked out here. They're not making that public. So if you were to go to ToysRUs.com, make this purchase right now, obviously everything you'd be paying Target, what is the Toys R Us brand True Kids getting in return for that? Or are they not getting anything? Are they just
the name?
Just promoting the brand right now? We don't know.
That's interesting.
Toys R Us continued to open, or not open, but run their regular stores in Canada, even though all the United States stores closed. They were still doing okay in Canada, and I can't figure out why. What would be different in Canada than the United States? Do you know the answer
More
to that?
More hockey toys.
Cheaper hockey sticks, yeah.
Sorry, Ryan.
Exactly.
I was always curious about that. And then also, Toys R Us had announced that they were going to open up a handful of stores that they were going to call Toys R Us Experience or something like that. Do you know what that is?
No, I don't. But I know that they want to go back, and this is something that Sears was talking about doing too, right? Let's start over from the ground up and let's try to build out, you know, as opposed to trying to, you know, make these stores that are out there survive. Let's just cut to the chase. Let's start back from the bottom and kind of grow this thing grassroots.
The heartbreaking Sears story is when Sears and Oak Brook spent all this money to renovate what they had going on, and then they filed for bankruptcy. Yeah. Like, it was like 6 months later or something.
I know. Ryan, the other aspect is every year in New York, they do a thing called Toy Fair in February. So what happens is that all the toy companies bring their products to the Javits Center and toy buyers can decide what they're going to buy for the whole year. You do that in February. And it used to be that if you sold your toy to Toys R Us, your year was complete because you knew that they were going to be carried by the world's largest toy store. But now all those toy manufacturers are saying everything's up for grabs because we sell a little bit to Target, a little bit to Walmart, a little bit to CVS. But we really don't know if a toy is a hit or a miss until the season's over.
Yeah, this will be a real interesting test to see if this brand can survive and if there's still value from some of those big toy makers. Yeah. I assume what you're talking about, I mean, are these like the Hasbros? And
Mattel, Kenner, everything.
They'll do that. I mean, I'm very interested to see how True Kids moves forward because obviously the business model they had before bankruptcy, it was they bit off way too much, you know, because they got into the Babies R Us. And, you know, once again, those products weren't exclusive either. You could get those at any Target store or any Walmart store. So we'll see how this works out. I think a lot of people, I think there's something of value with that brand because it does reach so many generations that are still involved in that process. Where they're buying for their kids, they're at least familiar with that brand. And if they can just keep that to hang on and find kind of their niches in this industry, you know, maybe it'll be a successful brand again. Maybe it'll revamp. I don't know.
Can you call me every day with an update?
Yes.
Thank you.
Also, someone said, I worked at Toys R Us for 10 years. We did have a price match guarantee.
Did they?
I try it anywhere I'm at. Yeah, because... Yeah.
What have you got to lose?
Yeah, there was some, like, 200 and some dollar calculator the kids needed for high school math. I couldn't believe it was that expensive. It was a T175 with turbo. I don't even know. And it was, like, 200 and some dollars. I found it at a Walmart online only, and I physically had it in my hand at Best Buy and said, listen, Walmart is having it for this amount of money. And they said, okay.
Oh. Oh, wow.
So, I mean, if they want the sale.
I think another takeaway from this story here and the day we're talking about it is, well, we're close to the holiday season.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, this is the time. This is when it all begins. I always remember, you know, you watch the Charlie Brown Great Pumpkin, and then the next commercial is usually going to be a toy commercial, kind of getting you ready for the next phase here.
Very true. Ryan, thanks for reporting on this. We appreciate it. Yep. That's Ryan Burrow.
Did you watch this with your girls?
Did I watch it? No, you know, I didn't.
They might have missed
it. Elmo years because of their ages.
I think Dylan was a little, maybe Michael, but my kids are a little younger than yours. I know Steve Cochran talks about Abigail Grace.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Oh, I panicked for a minute.
No, that's her name.
She watches Dorothy's the Fish. And Elmo had a pet fish, and her name was Dorothy. And Elmo is now going to be a late-night talk show host.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
With guests who are also Muppets or with live-action guests?
Sesame Workshop, the producers of Sesame Street, have announced they're launching a new late-night talk show hosted by none other than Elmo.
Hmm.
Taking aim at the likes of Jimmy Fallon and Jimmy Kimmel, the lovable
what
red...
What if he's real political? What if he's just constantly bashing politics?
He'd be red, wouldn't he?
Probably, yes.
Taking aim at the likes of Jimmy Fallon and Jimmy Kimmel, the lovable red puppet will interview celebrity guests on the new program, and here's what the title is.
You ready?
I'm ready.
The Not Too Late Show with Elmo.
That's a good title. Solid. Do we know the network?
HBO. It is pretty HBO? Sure. Yeah. The show is set to go into production next month. An air date has yet to be announced. It's part of an overall deal with the new streaming service HBO Max, and it includes airing the next 5 seasons of Sesame Street. But I don't know if this is targeted for adults or kids.
Oh, that's a tough call. I think it's more interesting if it's targeted towards adults, don't you?
I do, too.
I mean, I get it if it's for kids' show, because that's a funny idea. But if it's an adult show, I'm all in. I like that idea.
Well, Elmo has surfaced on Jimmy Fallon's show and everywhere. Yeah. And Saturday Night Live, the Muppets showed up. I know Elmo didn't.
Well, I don't know if anyone will remember this. But every once in a while, when Johnny Carson would take a Monday off, Kermit the Frog would sit in. He would host the Tonight Show.
Are you kidding?
He would do a monologue.
I thought that was in my imagination.
No, that was legit, and it was always very jarring because you go, "Wait, that he's on a kid's show. That's a puppet that's on a kid's show." But it was always very entertaining,
and it was all legitimate guests.
Absolutely.
Oh, well, I can't believe it took them. Why didn't they have a spinoff of that?
I don't know. It seems like a natural to do. I always wondered if they would ever take it to the next level. Now they have. It took a while. It took a long time for them to figure that out. But this could be a really funny idea if they do it right.
Yeah. Get ready to go down memory lane, because the HBO Max deal will also offer Sesame Street's extensive library of episodes spanning the last 50 years. Some which will be available for the first time ever.
So you get those like on demand, are they saying? Yeah.
Well, it's HBO Max, so that would be like, I don't know how everything works anymore. I just know that like if you have HBO, it doesn't necessarily mean you have HBO Max. Like you would have to upgrade.
Right.
Everything is a la carte. It's like in the old days, you would go to a restaurant and you would get soup and salad if you did the whole dinner. Mm-hmm. And now, like most good places, everything's a la carte. If you want asparagus on the side, it's $8 for that.
Yes, yes.
That's how our cable system is going. Yeah. Everything is a la carte.
Including asparagus. What kind of cable system do you have with asparagus? That's crazy. I remember like the characters that were on Sesame Street were kind of constant for a long time, and then all of a sudden, I don't know why my daughters didn't really get into it much. It was on every once in a while, but there were other shows that they preferred. But every once in a while, there'd be a character like Elmo that I didn't remember. Like, there was no version of Elmo when we watched it. He came way later.
You know why your girls didn't watch it? And this is kind of why my kids didn't? Because Nickelodeon came about.
Oh, you know what? That's probably it.
Because prior to Nickelodeon, there really weren't a lot of choices for kids to watch stuff.
Right. There was Nickelodeon, but then there were other channels that were like Nickelodeon.
Well, Disney Channel.
Yeah.
But still, I mean, when we were growing up, I'm telling you, I wish things would go back to where you didn't have that much choice.
It was easier for you back then?
For everything. I mean, there are 18,000 different flavors of Diet Coke and Coke now. There are just it's just too much. Oreos is a bastardization of themselves by trying different. Just give me an Oreo-flavored Oreo. Is that too much to ask
for? See, I'm the opposite. I love that there's always new flavors and new ideas. You're the opposite, though.
If it ain't broke, don't fix it. Well, I need to find out more information because I think Elmo.
What channel was Arthur on? Do you remember Arthur?
That was Channel 11, yeah.
Was that PBS?
Hey, it's a wonderful kind of. Yeah. That was Ziggy Marley who did the theme to that.
Was it really? I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. But he was an aardvark who looked like a camel.
Yeah. All those shows had an animal that was friends with other animals. Like, I thought that was a good lesson for kids. If you're different from other people or animals, you can still hang out with them.
Look at Ellen DeGeneres and George Bush.
Yes.
And why is anybody mad at anybody? I mean,
let's talk about that on the stream. That's a good idea. That's a great topic for the stream.
All right.
Join Wendy and I on the stream, and we'll talk about that and other things. The news is next from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.